Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit, Motown. Just because everybody took Motown to L.A. did not mean Detroit has lost its soul. I want to welcome you to tonight's program, and we've been struggling with some technical issues in the last couple of weeks to do just this particular show. So we're going to get it in tonight as best we can. And our first subject is titled, Why Do We Feel So Lonely? What is lonely? What takes us to that area in our hearts and our minds that we begin to experience and we have some background noise that we need to take care of here. So let's get this done. Let's see what we can do about it. It is unfortunate that that background noise cannot be eliminated completely because those are the cooling fans which keep the computers cool. So you're going to hear that slight hum, that buzz, just a bit. So we'll endeavor to do the best we can. It's a new subject for tonight's program, aside from loneliness, is some new news with respect to the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. There's some new research available which will expand our individual, our communal, and our national understanding of what is happening, as well as the new information with respect to our community, the black community specifically, with respect to the coronavirus proposed vaccine. Well, let's get started with this thing called loneliness. What is it? Why do you feel lonely? Modern day neuroscience is beginning to find some answers to this question, but not at all. A neuroscientist's hunt for loneliness could help us better understand the cost of social isolation in the coronavirus pandemic world we live in now, and the associated conditions or vicissitudes of life that already exist that are now on top of the isolation caused by the coronavirus pandemic. But let's look at something, a particular area. emotional loneliness. What is that? Well, let's take a look at a particular scenario. And it can be seen from both the male or the female perspective, though I must admit that men and women experience emotions significantly different. So let's take a scenario. You have two people who are supposed to be in so much love for one another. And then you find yourself standing in a bus stop one day, and you look up and you see that person that you love most, who just 24 hours before professed how much they love you, and you see them ride by in a car. It's the very person who humiliated them, abused them, assaulted them. And you see this, but they don't see you. That sensation, that feeling that consumes you in that instant creates a chemical reaction, a hormonal reaction within the body. At that point, that is the lowest point of that betrayal. And produces the lowest point of loneliness that a human being can experience. It is in that main spirit that we're looking to find out what loneliness is. So long before the world ever heard of the COVID-19 coronavirus, K-Time, the young researcher, set out to answer a question that has taken on new resonance in the age of social distancing. When people feel lonely, do they crave social interaction in the same way that you would hunger a person's presence or the way you crave food? And should she, as a researcher and her colleagues, detect and measure this hunger in the neural circuitry of the human brain? Loneliness is a universal thing. If I were to ask anybody on the street, do you know what it means to be lonely? And I would say quite probably 99 to almost 100% of people would say yes. Kay Tai is a neuroscientist at the Salk Institute of Biological Sciences. She says, and I quote, "It seems reasonable to argue that it should be a concept in neuroscience that requires detailed study. It's just that no one has ever found a way to test it and localize it to a specific series of cells." That is what the researchers are trying to do today. In the recent years, a vast scientific literature has emerged linking loneliness to depression, anxiety, alcoholism, and drug abuse. There's even a growing body of epidemiological work showing that loneliness makes you more likely to fall ill. Take, for example, a man or a woman who's led a relatively healthy lifestyle. To look at this person from afar, you would think they're 50 to 20 years younger than they actually are. When you look at that same person, after they have experienced the betrayal of love and emotion, and the abject terror and horror of loneliness that it brings, gray hair begins to appear. The sullen sag in the face begins to appear. Discoloration and jaundice begin to present itself in the eyes. What happened? There is an immunological reaction in the body, where the body responds to an outside force that is neither physical, chemical, or biological. It is a response to a stimulus that causes the body to produce those chemical reactions as a result of the betrayal that sends you into the depressive state called loneliness. It seems, I would think, to prompt the chronic release of hormones. And I would venture to say that it suppresses the healthy immune function. Biochemical changes from loneliness can accelerate the spread of cancer, hasten heart disease, and in the elder, produce Alzheimer's, or simply drain the most vital among us of the will to go on. We see this in people who have been together 35, 40, 50 years of marriage or relationship, because marriage is not the paper that you receive. Marriage is the relationship of the heart, mind, and spirit between two people, between people and a community, between a community and a nation. That is the marriage, not the paper. When that marriage is ruptured in some fashion, between people who have been together for those many years, one may expire due to natural causes. We just got old and tired and died. The one that is left behind falls into such a deep level of loneliness, they soon follow their after. Wow. Their body simply gave up. There was nothing wrong with him. He just gave up. So the ability to measure and detect it could help identify those at risk and pave a way for a new kind of intervention. So, dear family and friends, in the months ahead, many are warning we're likely to see the mental health impacts of the COVID-19 play out on a global scale. This scale, due to the anxiety of separation that we must experience and the normal transition of the vicissitudes of life, the betrayal of relationships, on top of that, will multiply in such a way that loneliness will become the biggest killer on the planet. The loneliness due to the breaking of the heart. Look for this in the months ahead. Psychiatrists are already worried about rising rates of suicide among those the age groups of, and this is fascinating, 10 years of age to 45 and 50 years of age. The suicide rate in a 40 to 50 year span has quadrupled in less than a year. 10-year-olds committing suicide. 20-year-olds committing suicide. 30, 40, and 50-year-olds committing suicide due to the loneliness of betrayal, the loneliness of separation, the loneliness of having not developed a firm relationship with God first and foremost above all others. Psychiatrists are also worried about the rising rates of drug overdoses in the United States alone, and the social isolation along with anxiety and chronic stress is one likely cause. The recognition of the impact of social isolation on the rest of mental health, everyone, really, really soon. Kay Tai in her research says, I think, the impact on mental health will be pretty intense and pretty immediate. Yet quantifying or even defining loneliness is a difficult challenge. So difficult, in fact, that neuroscientists have long avoided the topic. Loneliness, Kay-Tai says, is inherently subjective. It's possible to spend the day completely isolated in quiet contemplation and feel invigorated, or to stew in alienated misery surrounded by a crowd in the heart of a big city, or accompanied by close friends and family. Comes down to choice. If that which you choose, you say you have and want, then you're invigorated by your experience of contemplation on what it is you want. But if the crowd pressures you, strips you of that thing that you choose, and you go along with the crowd, there is nothing to undergird that desire, and it eventually collapses in upon itself. So even in the crowd, you are still yet alone. Let's take a more contemporary example. To participate in a Zoom call with loved ones in another city and feel deeply connected, or even more alone than when the call began. Alone, still yet alone. until it is your choice to be alone, knowing that which loves you and which that which you love is going to be there when you come out of your isolation. How do some men, some women, survive prison, survive being totally cut off from other than humanity, waiting to be saved? They survive it because they believe. Or go off to war and be confronted with an enemy who's trying to kill you and that you're trying to kill, with men that you don't know. And you form a bond because of your shared loneliness. You survive this environment 3-4 years at a time. And you come home, half crazed out of your mind because of what you experienced. But your survival is predicated upon the relationship of what you left behind, and it will be there upon your return. And when you find that which you had your greatest desire pinned upon is not there, it cut you loose, it betrayed you, it rode by with the other guy or with the other woman, and you were seen. Yet you had no clue. They told you nothing. That betrayal sends you into the pit of abject loneliness, that unquantifiable condition which precedes death. This fuzziness might explain the curious results that came back when researcher Tai, before publishing her first scientific paper on the neuroscience of loneliness in 2016, she ran a research for papers, or rather I should say ran a search for other papers on the topic. So she found studies on loneliness in psychological literature. The numbers of papers that also contain the words cell, neuron, or brain with relationship to something specific to find or the cause or the state of loneliness was precisely zero. Though the nature of loneliness had preoccupied some of the greatest minds in philosophy, literature, and art for millennia, neuroscientists have long assumed that question about how it might work in the human brain would elude their data-driven laboratories. How do you quantify the experience of loneliness? And where would we even begin to look in the brain? Because it is the entire mental capacity of that structure called brain that suffers the condition of loneliness. There's no one place. It becomes a vacuum where life energy is sucked out of an individual. That empty feeling that you feel in your core. You can't eat enough to fill it. You can't drink enough to drown it. You can't feel enough pain to suppress it. You can't get high enough to hide it. Why? Because there's no one place in your brain. This happiness, this loneliness, separates you from God. That is the emptiness. That is the void. That is the darkness. That is your hell. So the question is asked, what is loneliness? It's hell. And there's only one person that can bring you up from hell. And when you cry out in your suffering for God to bring you release, I am disturbed personally at this particular time with a chronic condition of loneliness at this time. I've lost so many. Nobody can help me close the gap. But my duty requires me to absorb. But duty does not really pay. Suffering silence, those who walk my road, who suffer in silence, and we laugh in pain. But we work in this thing called hell. So why do we experience loneliness? Because at each stage, these hits, the betrayal of a woman, the betrayal of a man, the death of this person, the death of that person, the loss of this love, the loss of that love, all hits you in a way for the instinct. You are separated spiritually from God. So, to find this measurable state called loneliness, researcher at the time wants to identify what that seemingly ineffable experience looks like when it is activated in the brain. It is my supposition that they will see a shutdown of brain activity for a period of time. If researcher time succeeds, it could lead to new tools for identifying and monitoring those at risk for illnesses worsened by loneliness. It could also yield better ways to handle what could be a looming public health crisis triggered by the COVID-19 coronavirus. The hunt for the loneliness neurons in the brain is on. Researcher Time has honed in on specific populations of neurons in rodent brains that seem to be associated with a measurable need for social interactions, a hunger that can be manipulated by directly stimulating the neurons themselves. To pinpoint these neurons researcher Ty relied on a technique she developed while working at a postdoctoral student in the Stanford University lab of Carl Dieseloff. Dr. Dieseloff had pioneered optogenetics, a technique in which genetically engineered light-sensitive proteins are implanted into brain cells. Researchers can then turn individual neurons on or off simply by shining lights on them through the fiber optic cables. Well, the technique is far too invasive to use on people, as well as an injection to the brain to deliver the proteins. It requires threading fiber optic cables through the skull and directly into the brain. This can be done with rats, yes, but not with people. It did allow the researchers to tweak neurons in live, freely moving rodents and then observe their behavior. The rodent brain and the human mind have similar characteristics, but the structure of the human mind as the most highly evolved created thing on the planet from God directly, such an action on the human brain, the structure, is more destructive than productive. Scientists have long known that by stimulating the amygdala area of the brain as a whole would cause an animal to cower in fear. But fear is not loneliness, though fear can be present. But by following the maze of connections in and out of different parts of the amygdala, researchers were able to demonstrate that the brain's fear circuit was capable of imbuing sensory stimuli with far more nuance than previously understood. It seemed to modulate courage, too, in a rodent. By the time researchers set up their labs at MIT, Iowa Institute for Learning and Memory in 2012, they were following the neural connections of the amygdala to places like the prefrontal cortex, known as the brain's executive, and the hippocampus, the seat of episodic memory. The goal was to construct maps of the circuits across the brain that we rely on to understand the world, make meaning of our moment-to-moment experiences, and respond to situations. But again, that's not in the presence of loneliness. Person who feels lonely and alone, fear is present. But fear is not the root or the cause of the loneliness. It is much different. Researchers today basically study loneliness largely by serendipity. Now, for those of you who do not know what serendipity means, I'm going to give you a note so that we are all clear on what I mean, that the researchers soundly away as a result of sharing the video. So serendipity in meaning is this. Pardon. It is the occurrence and development of events by chance in a happy or beneficial way. It's a roll of the dice. It's a guess. You had no idea what it made you feel good. A tragic example of that would be, and this is a good way for you to understand it, a woman who has been raped. Who finds pleasure in the sexual act of being raped, but is living the horror of the assault of the rape. She's guilty. She feels terrible about herself. She shreds her own thoughts and thinking. She believes herself to be a terrible person. Not because she was raped. She is humiliated and distraught, violated, abused because of it. But her body responded with pleasure from the assault of rape. Serendipity. So researchers, while scouting for other postdoctoral students, they came across the work of Gillian Matthews, a graduate student at the Imperial College of London. Matthews had made an unexpected discovery when he separated the mice, or rather when she separated the mice in her experiments from one another. Social isolation. The fact of being alone seemed to have changed the brain cells called DRN neurons. DRN neurons. Changed in a way that implies they may have played a role in loneliness. Researchers immediately saw the possibility. They believe it's incredible, this may be the key, that the signs of social isolation could be traced to a specific part of the brain make total sense. But where is it, and how would you find it? If this could be the region, they thought that would be the super interesting thing. In all their studies with the neurons, they never seen anything about social isolation before. The researchers realized that if Matthews could construct a map of the loneliness circuit, they could answer in the lab precisely the kind of questioning Dr. Tai and hope to explore. How does the brain imbue social isolation with meaning? How and when does the objective experience of being around other people, in other words, become the subjective experience of loneliness? First step was to better understand the role of the DRN neurons, what they play in this particular mental state. One of the things that researchers noticed was that when they stimulated these neurons, the animals were more likely to seek social interaction with other mice. In a later experiment, They showed that animals, when given the choice, actively avoided the areas of their cage that, when entered, triggered the activation of neurons. This suggested that their quest for social interaction was driven more by a desire to avoid pain than to generate pleasure. An experience that mimicked the aversive experience of loneliness. Thus, their loneliness was driven by, if I go over here by myself, you're going to hurt me. If I go over here with everybody else, I'll be safe. The pain, pleasure motivator, not loneliness. In a follow-up experiment, the researchers put some of the mice in solitary confinement for 24 hours. Then reintroduced them to social groups. As one would expect, the animals sought out and spent an unusual amount of time interacting with other animals, as if they'd been lonely. Then the researchers isolated those same mice again, this time using optogenetics to silence the DRN neurons after the period in solitary. This time, the animals lost the desire for social contact. It was as if the social isolation had not been registered in their minds at all. Scientists have long known that the brain harbors the biological equivalent of a complex hemostatic system that allows our gray matter to track the state of our basic biological needs, like those for food, water, and sleep. The purpose of the system is to drive us toward behaviors aimed at maintaining or restoring our natural state of balance. So the question would become, what does finding loneliness mean for people? It means this. We have been born into this world with social contact with our mother, to feed, to be nurtured, to be developed, and grown and protected, is wired directly into the structure of the brain, and then developed further as we grow to an adulthood, to choose when we are alone and when we are accompanied. But the wiring and programming is inherent and hardwired, mitigated by choice, the will. The will is the most misunderstood aspect of the human mind. The will to do or the will not to do. In the words of Yoda, do, not do. There is no in-between. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to take a very brief water break, and we'll be right back to continue the show, because I'm enjoying myself, and I hope you're enjoying me as well. Let's see what piece of fine music we shall share
And I think in the day of the COVID-19 virus, the H2O Blues by Gil Scott-Heron is quite appropriate. It's not the Watergate Blues, but hell, you're foolish enough to speak to the Watergate reporter. Maybe you ought to be suffering from the Watergate Blues.
Don't want to be involved in this, man. This is gonna be a blues number. But first, I want to do a little bit of background on the blues and say what it is. Like, there are six cardinal colors, and colors have always come to signify more than simply that particular shade, like redneck or got the blues. That's where you apply colors to something else, you know, to come up with what it is you're trying to say. So there are six cardinal colors: yellow, red, orange, green, blue, and purple. And there are 3,000 shades. And if you take these 3,000 shades and divide them by six, you'll come up with 500. Meaning there are at least 500 shades of the blues. For example, there's the I ain't got me no money blues. There is the I ain't got me no woman blues. There's the I ain't got me no money and I ain't got me no woman, which is the double blues. And for years it was thought that black people was the only one who could get the blues, so the blues hadn't come into no international type of fame. But lately we done had Frank Rizzo with the lie detector blues. We done had the United States government talking about the energy crisis blues. And we're going to dedicate this next poem here to Spearhead X, the X second in command in terms of this country.
Got the blues.
And the poem is called H2O GATE Blues. And if H2O is still water and GATE is still gate, what we're getting ready to deal on is the Watergate Blues. Let me see if I can dial this number right quick. Click. Click. I'm sorry. The government you have elected is inoperative. Click. Inoperative. Just how blind will America be? The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all could see the plot and still could not. Let me do that part again. Just how blind will America be?
Ain't no telling.
The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all could see the plot and claimed that we could not. Just how blind, America? Just as Vietnam exploded in the rice, snap, crackle, and pop could not stop people determined to be free. Just how blind will America be? The shock of a Vietnam defeat sent Republican donkeys scurrying down on Wall Street. And when the roll was called, it was Pepsi-Cola and Phillips 66, Boeing, Dow, and Lockheed. Ask them what they're fighting for, and they'll never mention the economics of war. Ecological warfare, above all else, destroy the land. If we can't break the Asian will, we'll bomb the dikes and starve the man. America, the international Jekyll and Hyde, the land of a thousand disguises, sneaks up on you but rarely surprises, plundering the Asian countryside in the name of Fu Manchu. Afraid of shoeless, undernourished Cambodians, while we strike big wheat bargains with Russia, our nuclear enemy. Just how blind, America? But tell me, who was around where Hale Boggs died? And what was the cause of LBJ's untimely demise? And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover, the king is proud of Patrick Gray, while America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate? How long will the citizens sit and wait? It's looking like Europe in 38. Did they move to stop Hitler before it was too late? How long, America, before the consequences of keeping the school system segregated, allowing the press to be intimidated, watching the price of everything soar, and hearing complaints because the rich want more? It seems that Macbeth and not his lady went mad. We've let him eliminate the whole middle class. The dollar's the only thing we can't inflate, while the poor go on without a new minimum wage. But what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, and there are those who say America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. How much more evidence do the citizens need that the election was sabotaged by trickery and greed? And if this is so, and who we got didn't win, let's do the whole goddamn election over again. The obvious key to the whole charade would be to run down all of the games they played. Remember Dieter Beard and ITT, the slaughter of Attica, the CIA in Chile, knowing nothing about Allende at this time in the past, as I recollect, Augusta, Georgia, the nomination of Supreme Court Justice to head off the tapes, William Calley's executive interference in the image of John Wayne, Kent State, Jackson State, Southern Louisiana, hundreds of them authorized bombing raids, the chaining and gagging of Bobby Seale. Somebody tell these Maryland governors to be for real. We recall all of these events just to prove that Waterbuggers in the Watergate wasn't no news. The thing that seems to justify all of our fears is that all this went down in the last 5 years. But tell me, what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, while America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. We leave America to ponder the image of justice from its new wave of leaders. Frank Rizzo, the high school graduate mayor of Philadelphia, whose ignorance is surpassed only by those who voted for him. Richard Daley, imperial Napoleonic mayor of Chicago, who took over from Al Capone and continues to implement the same tactics. George Wallace, Lester Maddox, Storm Thurmond, Ronald Reagan, an almost endless list that won't be missed when at last America is purged. And the silent White House with the James brothers once in command. But see the sauerkraut mafia men deserting the sinking White House ship and their main mindless megalomaniac Ahab. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. And what are we left with now? Bumper stickers that say Free the Watergate 500. Spy movies of the same name with a cast of thousands. And that ominous phrase that if Nixon knew, Ag knew. But Ag didn't knew enough to stay out of jail. And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray. And there are those who swear they've seen King Richard. 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 Beneath that cesspool. Watergate. Four more years of that.
Why would we send our people to the slaughterhouse amid tens of thousands of new COVID-19 cases reported daily in the United States? The fever pitch to get a vaccine on the market in a fraction of the time it normally takes is pressing forward. This, despite a lack of participation in clinical trials from blacks, who second only to healthcare workers, have been targeted for a vaccine by national health agencies. There's also an effort underway to get black people to co-sign the drive for the vaccine, with top officials speaking to black groups and organizations. U.S. voters are skeptical when it comes to a potential COVID-19 vaccine, and say that one made available this year would be rushed, at least according to a recent CBS poll on the matter. Just 21% of voters nationwide now say they would get a vaccine as soon as possible if one became available at no cost, down from 32% in late July. Most would consider it, but wait to see what happens to others before getting one, noted the CBSNews.com. When asked what their first thought would be if a vaccine was made available this year, 35% of those surveyed said it would be a scientific achievement, but 65% said their first thought would be that it was rushed through. The survey conducted between September 2nd and September 4th on behalf of CBS News by YouGov was based on a representative sample of nearly 2,500 registered voters. How Democrats and Republicans viewed the coronavirus vaccine development differed. Of the 65% that responded, their first thought would be that a vaccine made available this year was rushed through. 77% who felt this way were Democrats, compared to only 48% Republican survey respondents. Among white Democrats, the poll revealed whites were more than twice as likely as blacks in the party to say they would be willing to get a vaccine as soon as one was made available. Donald Trump has insisted a new vaccine could be ready before or around November 3rd elections. There's fear. The president will pressure federal agencies and vaccine makers to meet his desired deadline. It would increase his chances of re-election, for sure. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has been working through an initiative dubbed Operation Warp Speed to accelerate delivery of 300 million doses of a safe, effective vaccine for COVID-19 by January 2021. But that is apparently too short of a time for the president. One black expert said completion of a safe vaccine generally, typically, more often than not, takes 10 years to 15 years. Others have said it takes a minimum of at least 4 years. That is almost unheard of, that a safe vaccine is produced in 9 months. This ain't the movies, baby. This ain't Star Trek. The H1N1 vaccine was developed in 2009, over about a 9-month period from the discovery of that virus until a vaccine was made widely available to the public. But such expectation and turnaround time is rare. Federal officials insist vaccine safety and efficacy is not being compromised. In a rush to produce a cure for the COVID-19 and break its attendant lockdown, the trials are participants, or I should say partnership, with several dollars going to pharmaceutical companies to produce the vaccine. There is now talk that if the trials go well, the final phase of trials could be accelerated to allow for vaccine production. Another departure from standard safety procedures. Don't take the vaccine. There are 14 therapies that are in the world today that we can use to fight the COVID-19 virus. Segregation of Islam Minister Louis Farrakhan, in his July 4th address, The Criterion, from the farm in Michigan. Minister Farrakhan warned blacks in America and in Africa not to simply accept vaccines or treatments from those who have a history of medical malpractice and evil against black people. He called for the ending of the Cuban embargo to allow Cuban treatments and doctors to get involved in saving U.S. lives, and for convening black experts to discuss and develop ways to protect black people from harm. Blacks have generally accounted for 1/3 of all deaths from the COVID-19 virus, usually from pre-existing conditions like diabetes, obesity, asthma, heart disease, high blood pressure, and other ailments that increase susceptibility to the COVID virus. And now add to that list mental health disease. Mr. Farrakhan also condemned Attorney General Alan Dershowitz, or rather Attorney Alan Dershowitz, who has been a Trump ally at times, for arguing forced vaccination. That such a thing could be lawful. So Mr. Dershowitz, if you bring the vaccine, and you're going to bring your army to force us to take it, once you try to force us, that's a declaration of war on all of us. You only have this one life. Fight like hell to keep it, and fight like hell to destroy those whose heart and mind is to destroy you and take your life from you. He says, and I quote, I say to my brothers and sisters in Africa, if they come up with a vaccine, be careful. Don't let them vaccinate you with their history of treachery through vaccines throughout medication along the continent of Africa. I say to the African president, do not take their medications. I say to those of us in America, we need to call a meeting of our skilled virologists, epidemiologists, students of biology and chemistry, and we need to look at not only what they give us, we need to give ourselves something better. He is 100%. He called for the right actions, said Yah Simpson, a Chicago-based community epidemiologist. She spoke to the final call on behalf of her organization, CATS, the Association of Clinical Trial Services, and the Chicago chapter of the National Black Agenda Consortium. The group had a Zoom discussion about COVID-19, blacks and vaccines on September 3rd. 6 million people have COVID. You're trying to come up with a vaccine to prevent other millions of people from getting it. But 6 million from this year alone is going to grow, she added. The black epidemiologist added, I think that we can create good vaccines I believe in theory, she said. Has that really happened? On some levels, but not wholly. She was floored when she heard Mr. Farquhar call to action regarding black doctors and epidemiologists. TACT hosted a virtual town hall with black healthcare experts and practitioners talking about what they should be doing to curb the COVID-19 and improve overall black health. Dr. Donald Alcina of Meharry Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee, who developed a successful treatment for the Zika virus, participated. Meharry College is participating in clinical trials for the COVID vaccine. He says, and I quote, "The reason I'm doing this is because I listened to this Farrakhan speech on July 4th. I was sitting in my bed, me and my son, watching it on his cell phone. Almost fell off the bed when he said, epidemiologist. Ms. Simpson said, my husband and I started screaming, like, Minister, I'm here. What do you want me to do? A vaccine is a preventative, and everything being done to create one for COVID-19 is an experiment," said Mrs. Simpson. "And more importantly, I'm not against vaccines in the theory. I'm against creating a COVID vaccine before you create a better treatment. If you treat people with the virus, they don't spread it, and you don't have national numbers like we have now, 5 million, almost 6 million people. According to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the hospital rate for 100,000 blacks stands at 247, compared to 53 per 100,000 with whites. In other words, that's almost 5 times the chance of getting hospitalized, even though African Americans comprise just 13% of the U.S. population," he said in a live stream interview with the National Newspaper Publishers Association, which represents 200 black-owned weekly newspapers. It's important to note that when Mr. Farrakhan said, don't take the vaccine, he didn't say it in a vacuum. It's not as though we're not offering a program for salvation, and the majority of medical and health professionals acknowledge that it's not the COVID virus alone. When you look at the deaths, there's always some other complications with it," said Student Minister Ava Mohammed, national spokesman for Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. "Knowing the health challenges blacks suffer, it's known in the health and medical field that taking a new vaccine for the coronavirus can be exceedingly dangerous," added Minister Mohammed, who is also a lawyer. "The problem is that with COVID-19, most of the deaths from this virus, they're not from the virus directly. They're from the overreaction of the immune system, the inflammation. And to put it in layman's terms, the body kills itself. 90% of the American people have a compromised immune system and are unhealthy to some degree because of how we live, how we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the stress that we're under, the lack of exercise, the lack of exposure to sunshine and water and sand, and of course, disobedience to God's law, she continued. During a virtual meeting with the National Medical Association, a black physicians group, and the Rainbow Push Coalition to discuss health equity, Robert Redfield, CDC director, urged blacks not to give up their right to participate in clinical research. He admitted August 8th that trust has to be rebuilt. Dr. Redfield said federal government efforts to rebuild trust and increase health equity include outreach and funding to institutions like Morehouse School of Medicine, which received a $40 million federal grant through the Department of Health and Human Services to help with outreach and lower infection rates in the black community. Dr. Redfield says similar efforts are underway in the Latino community. Another vital session about COVID-19 and vaccines with black medical professionals held in collaboration with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation September 3rd with Dr. Leon McDougal, president of the National Medical Association. He spoke favorably about the study and use of alpha interferon as a solution. Cuba has used alpha interferon to treat COVID-19 and also has clinical trials underway. Infectious disease specialist Dr. Dial Hewley of Bronxville, New York, talked about alpha interferon on the CBS Foundation panel. I listened to the minister on the 4th of July, and that's why I wanted us to speak to this during the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation panel of experts, said Dr. McDougal. What I will say, though, is don't necessarily write off the vaccine, because the vaccine may be important, but they need to go through the proper process in regards to phase 1, 2, or 3 trials. Dr. McDougal told this to the final call. Also on August 24th, COVID-19 virtual town hall meeting featured Dr. Francis Collins, National Institute of Health Director, and was hosted by the Rainbow Push Coalition and the National Medical Association, Dr. McDougal and Dr. Deborah Forhoge, called for health equity in treatment, testing, funding, and top-tier federal positions of authority. National Institute of Health Director Collins announced the vaccine was on target to start immunizing people in early 2021. He expressed dismay at polls that indicate 30% of Americans and about 50% of black Americans an underserved group don't want the vaccine. Dr. McDougal argued for repairing breaches blacks have with experience in health care and quickly increasing the diversity of clinical and public health research, including trials to reflect those communities. Those changes can come quickly, some professionals argue, just like the National Institute of Health is expediting a clinical trial from phase 1 in 1.5 years to 63 days, said Dr. Furhold. CNN reported on September 4th that blacks are just 7% of trial volunteers, and Moderna, which is making a vaccine, that it would slow down trials until more blacks can be recruited in order for the vaccine to be effective. A diverse pool of study participants is needed, said the experts. Blacks are underrepresented overall in clinical trials, and efforts are underway to recruit more non-white participants. Minister Muhammad argued key questions go to the safety and the effectiveness of the vaccine. Does it work? And what is being said to black people is that we want to experiment on you to see whether or not it works, he said. The way the U.S. government functions, and we know it's corporate control, but the standard for vaccination is that if a vaccine is 60% effective, then it gets the green light. Mr. Muhammad is also concerned that at some point, trial vaccines will be used on people with less healthy systems. Blacks aren't taking the vaccine, number one, because the so-called medical profession, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, ranks low globally and has no record of keeping blacks healthy. But what we do know is white America's record, as the minister stated in the criterion, is of how they deal with black people and even their own people. Case in point, the polio vaccine, which contained cancer itself and was pretty much didn't eradicate, but it reduced polio way down to where it may be a handful of people every year. But it started an epidemic of cancer in the black community. The same medical profession, they use black men in the Tuskegee experiment, where black men with syphilis were denied treatment to study the effects of the disease for decades, is not offering any natural therapy, including access to fresh, healthy food. That's also saying we should undergo these tests. Why? Why would you lead our people to the slaughterhouse? She asked. And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Don't be a fool all your life. Don't take that vaccine. Let them test it on themselves first before you let them experiment on you. It has been my treasure and my pleasure to share time with you this evening. And I pray, Allah, that I'm allowed to come back next week on Tuesday to share additional information with respect to the COVID-19 virus trials that they're looking to shove down our throats. Till then, I love you, baby. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. OR 02-09-99.